When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
My guest today is Javon Wooden. Javon is a speaker, facilitator, and coach specializing in empathetic leadership. He empowers organizations to achieve breakthrough results by cultivating high-performing teams, fostering cultures of innovation, and boosting employee engagement. With a unique background spanning the military, business, and world-renowned organizations, he blends data-driven insights with the power of empathy to unlock the full potential of leaders and their teams. Javon's proven strategies have been featured in major publications like Forbes, Entrepreneur, and Inc. magazine. His own journey from overcoming adversity to earning a Bronze Star for heroic leadership adds a depth of understanding and authenticity to his message. He has a passion for helping others succeed and inspires audiences to embrace their own potential for greatness. As the CEO of Brightmind Consulting Group, he offers dynamic keynotes, transformative workshops, and individualized coaching programs. He is committed to working alongside leaders to build thriving workplaces that drive sustainable business growth. Oh, I almost forgot. Javon hosts a weekly podcast entitled Design Your Life and Business. His guests bring a wide range of experiences and expertise to the podcast. I've dipped in a bit and recommend this podcast. So there's a little promo for your podcast there, pal.
Hey,
and,
I'll take
and
it.
Also, yeah, so welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast. Yeah. I want to know who this guy is. I mean, this guy is incredible.
Can I just have you introduce me all the time, Dennis? Because that you really bring it, man.
Well, you know, again, there's some things I'm good at, but it is you. And there's, I guess, so this is me jumping in. And it wasn't quite sure how we'd get into our conversation. But as I just had the opportunity to read your introduction again, we have a number of ways in which we connect. Obviously, one of the things that I talk about a lot and is important, obviously, to organizations of all types are their leaders and the role of leadership, at not just at the top of organizations, but throughout organizations. So we have a common interest in that, as we should, because at the end of the day, businesses survive and succeed on the backs of good leaders. They don't have good leaders, they're not going to be successful. And I'm sure that's been your experience. I also notice, you know, that you talk about empathy. You talk about the empathetic leadership. I want you to say a few words about that. Empathy, obviously, is a soft skill, a quality of a person. And you talk about it a lot. It's an important feature in a number of the things that you do. So again, I want to hear more about what your thoughts are with regards to leadership with the term empathy associated with it. And again, you're also engaged in doing workshops and coaching, working alongside people, helping others succeed. So I mean, just the way you put forth who you are, you really do speak a lot about people's qualities. So you really are, as I am, I'm talking to the people in industry. You talk to the people in organizations. So I think that, you know, we have different outlets for how we do things, but I'm anxious to hear a number of the things that you're going to share in the next 30 or so minutes. So let's start with that. With your, it's really almost like it's a bit of a brand kind of an issue with you, this notion of empathetic leadership. Talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe, you know, the term empathy, you know, it's also often looked at as weakness, right? It's also often equated to that. And I always challenge that. I always let people know that that's actually a foundational skill, right? It's something that you can learn, you know, but it's also something that is necessary. So I venture to say that it's like learning language. If you don't learn empathy, you're going to really struggle with getting people to follow you. Right. John Maxwell talks a lot about influence. I believe the empathetic leaders are the key. They're those level five leaders that we heard about in Good to Great from Jim Collins. So when I talk about empathetic leadership, it's combining the two qualities. So you have empathy, which is being able to treat people how they want to be treated, being able to actively listen to people, being able to understand and have foresight enough to say, you know what, this person is going to need these resources to perform at a high level. This person may need some support, may need certain benefits, et cetera, right, to get the job done. And an empathetic culture really fosters that innovation, and it fosters this employee engagement that we hear so much about, how it's only 77%, right, disengaged employees right now. So that leaves 33% are really disengaged, right, or only are engaged, right? So we work to really create this cohesive, inclusive culture through their leaders, because it starts at the top. You have to have buy-in, but you also have to lead from the front, as we say in the military. If you are not representing the culture you want to be thriving in and having your workplace, it's going to be tough sledding.
What would you say are, empathy obviously is vital and foundational. What are some of the other qualities that you would ascribe to great leaders?
Yep. Then they all fall under empathy, right? So a great leader knows how to listen. You know, a lot of leaders think they need to have all the answers. That's not true. Right? The best leaders can listen and really synthesize the information that they are given and then find out what is best, right? They may not have the best idea. So that's why you have a team, right? That's why you have people that work for you, because they're the experts in whatever it is. And you have to trust that, right? The great leaders are trusting, but they also know when they need to step in, right? They're able to just feel, they have a feel. Right. They have that moment to say, you know what? All right, this is it. This is the way we're going to go. And people are going to follow that. So a leader is really all encompassing. And they're also very patient. Right. They're very patient. They're not just going to jump on that first thing. They're not driven by impulses. They're not just going to say, you know what? We need to get this product out right now. I really don't care how it looks. Right. They're going to say, this is what matters. This is our minimum viable product. Let's make sure that we train to standard, and our standard needs to be excellence. Right. Excellence would not be exception to the rule. But they're very focused. Right. They have a mission driven purpose, and the purpose is never money. Right. Although that is what businesses need and thrive on, the purpose is first people. And I hear that a lot, but a lot of organizations do not do that. They don't understand that the lifeline needs to be taken care of to drive the bottom line. Great leaders understand this.
Why is there a persistent problem in society, and certainly in businesses, dealing with two different kinds of gaps? One is related to gender, and the other is related to generations. What are you seeing as far as how each of those are impacting how businesses operate, how people are coming into the beginnings of careers, and how they make decisions to stay with organizations that they initially join?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dennis. I mean, change is hard for a lot of folks, right? When you're stuck in your ways, so to speak, especially as a leader who's been there 20, 30 years, right? Things have worked that way for a long, long time. New ideas come and challenge that whole paradigm that you're used to. It's tough to integrate that. And by nature, right, the term culture, if you look up the definition, it is the beliefs and thoughts of a group of people, right? So these new generations add to that group of people. We're not used to them, right? And when it comes to gender, again, we know, you know, that this is a white male dominated, a lot of industry, especially construction, right? So when you're challenged by different genders, different demographics, including the generation, you are going to struggle with that. It's just a known fact, but it's up to you to acknowledge that and say, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing here. I need to get some help. I need to bring in the folks that can help me with this transformation, digital transformation, generational transformation, cultural transformations. Because if you do not, you're going to start wondering why your talent is leaving so quickly, why you can't hold on to those A players that are so coveted. And then you're going to also wonder why the productivity is slipping.
What do you think are the major hindrances to the younger generations committing to a longer-term involvement with companies they join? We hear a lot about how, and in fact, the millennials for a time, and I would argue that's every generation in their time, but the millennials have been described as lazy, not good employees, not loyal, not interested in staying places for any length of time. It's labeled in a very harsh way, not a fair way, because you know I get to say from my generation, which is a baby boomer, that every generation at a time was described using those same words. that of late it's been the millennials. Now it's moving on a little bit to Gen Z in reference to both millennials and boomers and Xers for that matter. So, you know, what do you think are the hurdles that are difficult to get over to try to smooth all that out and bring and unify around a new culture?
Yeah. And I always say, like, once you get to be able to say back in my day, then you know you hit a generational shift, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm on the mind that, like you said, every generation goes through this and we go through it on these revolutions, right? So the Industrial Revolution, the digital transformation, all these different turning points. And then we see news articles about how, you know, the next generation is lazy or they just don't want to stick. But I don't find that to be true. I'm finding real, like, if they really enjoy where they're at, they're very engaged in what's going on. But you also have to be willing to listen to that new generation because they're going to bring that innovation that we covet. They're going to make sure that your organization is, you know, diverse. They're going to make sure that it's inclusive. They're going to make sure it has that belonging, that DEIB that becomes buzzwords for so many people. They're going to be the ones that drive that change because there's a passionate purpose, a passionate cause that they're really believing in. So what we need to do as the leaders who are bringing in these millennials and Gen Zers and all these folks that they call problem children, we need to take that into account, right? Give them some of that responsibility. Allow mm-hmm. them to say, you know what? I'm stepping in here. I have a fresh vision. Allow them to look around and say, I think we need to do X thing. And here's how, right? And if you get them involved, they're not going to just bounce away. They're going to say, all right, this, they really are listening to me. They really understand.
You were talking about some of the dynamic of communication with different generations is really how I was listening to that. And one of the thoughts that comes to mind is that very simple idea that younger generations, they want to understand things. They don't want to just be told to do things. You know, so there's a three-letter word in their vocabulary, which they throw around quite a bit that my generation doesn't particularly care to deal with. And the three-letter word is why. Why do we do that? Why haven't we changed this? Why haven't we looked at that? And again, as you get older, you get comfortable. You get stubborn as well. And so I'm going to take a harsh view of my own generation because we continue, even though there are fewer and fewer of us every day, we continue to be a hindrance to the evolution of society in some pretty profound ways. I don't talk about politics, but I do talk about old people in important positions. You know, we're facing, you know, some tremendous challenges, and the oldest generation that's got any real numbers in the active workforce, which is my generation, we're the ones that are slowing social progress. We're the ones that are setting a tone, which is a deaf tone, to change in terms of people's wants and people's needs. How do you advise your clients to deal where they have still an individual or individuals with a solid hold on control of an organization and trying to deal with trying to move forward? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, Dennis. You know, you don't hear a lot of folks say it's quite, you know, I love that candor of yours. So I really believe that, you know, the how, the why is important, but also the how. They want to be involved in the how. So again, if you give them that responsibility, you say, you know what, this is what we need and let them run with that and include them in those responsibilities. Anyone's going to feel like they're valued, right? If they're actually being heard and you're giving them the responsibilities, you're letting them, you know, run with some autonomy and come up with their ideas, they're going to feel involved. But again, those leaders who've been in those positions for a long time, who are used to things running how they ran, they have to be receptive to all of that stuff. Don't just give someone a project just to keep them busy for a minute. And then you say, oh, we're going to scrap that. We're going to do this way anyway, because then you lose the trust. Right. And then everyone's going to be like, why should I do any of this work when we're just going to go with their idea anyway? Right. So you really mm-hmm. have to take those ideas into account and really implement the best solution. Again, leaders don't need to have the answers for everything, because oftentimes we're very good at specific things. Right. That doesn't mean we're good at the technical thing. Right. We have to know our strengths, and then we have to have people who really complement and supplement what we do very well. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why there's a leadership team is not typically just one person. Right. So mm-hmm. we have to take advantage of having these team members who are very skilled in their areas, right, their respective areas. And, you know, don't just look at someone's age and say, you don't know anything. Or don't look at someone's gender and say, hey, you don't have certain experiences, because you don't know. Find out, take some time to really identify people's strengths, find out what values they bring, what experiences they've had, right? We don't take enough time to do that as leaders. We always say we're too busy to get to know our folks. Well, I'd venture to say, if you do know your folks, then you'll know that you can job rotate, right? Some people, even though they have the title of a specific thing, they may actually be better at something else in another role, right? So you can leverage those strengths on projects, and get things done a lot faster and more effectively if you do take your time to listen and really get involved and engage with your people.
Yeah. I talk about inclusion and social justice as elements of interest for leaders to focus on. DEI is big in conversation over the last several years. Depending on where you go, you know, our country is a very diverse place. I mean, you can go to one city versus another, and they may have an entirely different view of the meaning, purpose, and value of DEI strategies and learning about DEI. Other places you go, and they embrace it enthusiastically. I chose to grab the inclusion piece and then something different called social justice, which when I talk to people about that, what I'm trying to help us focus on is that inclusion means everybody ought to be in the game. That's mm-hmm. in a very simple sense. It acknowledges that people are different. It acknowledges that there's a lack of equity. It acknowledges those things, but inclusion is really the sustaining goal and vision. In addition to that, when I talk about social justice, I'm also talking about things like wellness, mental health, addiction, suicide, discrimination, of course. I thought about social justice very actively and decided to continue to have that in my framework as a result of the George Floyd incident, which when you say this person's name out loud, when you say his name, it still makes you twitch because it was such a horrible, horrible day in this country's history. But it's what our reality is. Our reality is that we don't treat each other equally. We don't do a good job of acknowledging that the best way to start in being a human is to treat other people with respect and expect the same in return. If they don't behave in that manner, then you make decisions about what you want to do. But when I was thinking about the importance of soft skills, which is where all this stuff is under that umbrella, when I was thinking about it and we decided on what the title for the book was, and again, I'll share this with you quickly as a story. The title of the book was Soft as Steel because soft is to relationships. Soft skills are to relationships what steel is to relationships in business. The soft skills, you know, are your qualities that help you build relationships. The steel and softest steel is what is necessary to build structures and places that will last for a long time. That's the analogy that I was trying to draw out with the title Softest Steel. And then the last song, which I think we may have said it already, that is that they're really difficult. It's really difficult to take a look at yourself. Because that's what's required. If you want to try to get a handle on what your qualities are, you can't rely solely on somebody else telling you what they are. You can include that. And I'm sure as you work with your clients, you do things like 360s and other kinds of, mm-hmm. of assessments to gather information or I like to call them facts about an individual. But again, you know, holding a mirror up in front of you is a very, very difficult thing to do for many people. And so some just don't do it for long periods, if not their entire lives. You know, I never really held a mirror up in a way that began to have an impact on me dramatically until I was 50 years old. So that's just 20 years ago. So I've had a good 20-year run knowing more about myself in an acknowledged, actual way and being able to do something with that because that's what soft skills are all about. We can also talk about emotional intelligence. Now we're talking about artificial intelligence. I want to talk about that for a couple minutes. But that's the whole thing with regards to the people part of every business is that it starts with you. It starts with you understanding yourself, being aware of yourself, managing yourself, and then being interested and aware of the others you come in contact with for the purpose of having a relationship with them. Because right. Life is built on relationships. We don't live in individual silos. We live in a mixing bowl, and it's a messy mixing bowl. So your thoughts.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. You said a lot of great things there, Dennis. And one of the things you mentioned was emotional intelligence. Often, you know, we hear that, but I just want people to understand, the listeners to understand that emotional intelligence has four components to it, right? There's the self-recognition, self-management piece. Then there's the social recognition and social management piece, right? And oftentimes, you know, when you talk about putting that mirror, it's the self-recognition piece, right? We don't take the time to be accountable to who we are. And so many people say that they are stuck in their ways, that change is impossible for them because they don't believe that they need to change. They don't see themselves as a catalyst for anything that's negative, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of us need to put that mirror up and say, you know what? What am I recognizing about myself? Do I really know who I am? Do I know what I value? Do I know what I stand for? What are my non-negotiables? What are my pet peeves, right? What are the types of folks that cause me to adjust into people, you know, someone that's not necessarily who I want to be? Like, there's a lot to being a human, right? It is a complex thing. And I think that I recommend that everyone does some type of emotional intelligence quotient assessment, right? Mm-hmm. Because that gives you insights into your tendencies. It's not a prescriptive thing to say, this is who you are. It's more of these are your behavioral tendencies and patterns. Mm-hmm. And once you recognize patterns, just like you talked about the social justice initiative, once you recognize what the patterns are for you, then you can be a better catalyst for change in your organizations and in society. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the George Floyd piece, right? That has been the Black community's reality for forever, right? Mm-hmm. So when I heard some CEOs get on and say they didn't know those things was happening, you know, that's something that should change, right? You mm-hmm. should definitely be aware of what's happening in the communities that your decisions are impacting, right? Mm-hmm. So as a leader, I feel like that should be a part of your responsibility. The decisions you make, how is it impacting, you know, those communities? We hear a lot about CSR and ESG and all these other terms, right? That's what it's talking about. And I feel like if we're not really understanding how the communities and how our people that work for us day in and day out and how all of these things are impacted on a domino effect scale by our decisions, then we're doing a disservice, right? So we have to make sure we're not making these decisions in a vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me, one of the things that I like to say is, because it acknowledges that everybody's got to, you know, in business, in commerce, or even in charitable organizations, other any place where people are together to accomplish some overall purpose, a business. Everybody's got a job. Mm-hmm. They're engaged or hired to do a job. It's got a title, maybe a description. They know what their duties are, et cetera, et cetera. That's all. That's the easy part. You know, I'm an accountant, so that's my job. I do accounting things. But the part that is what makes organizations really succeed over time, each person has in their mind that they need to remember that it's important not just what their job is, but how they are when they're doing what they do, whatever that job is. And that all speaks to emotional intelligence, to soft skills, to a person's qualities. I mean, you could be in the construction world, I would say you could be the best carpenter on the planet, best finished carpenter. Nobody's better than this guy or gal is a finished carpenter, but they can't get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all that great technical or skill component to who they are doesn't cut it. It's not enough. And that cuts a wide swath across, you know, what's going on in a lot of industries with a lot of different people. And that is that people are, you know, the leaders are not recognizing in a sufficient way where their value lies. It's a trite way of saying it, but they set the tone for the organization. If it's a very large organization, they are forced to, and it makes it more challenging. It doesn't allow them to step away from the role of doing that. They simply have to delegate it. They have to have other people that are leaders, that they're the ultimate leader. They set the overall tone, but they've got people who are, you know, in the old terms, cascading down organizations. Mm-hmm. But that has a practical, useful meaning today, because as we look at society and we look at the fact that the differences seem to continue to divide us rather than simply be recognized as a fact. Again, I pose it as a question. I ask the audience the question, what's one thing that every person in this room has in common with every other person in this room, any place they go? And the answer is that they're different from each other. There's not a single human being that's the same as another human being. Even identical twins aren't the same, because diversity has so many dimensions to it. And we're still grabbing on to that in all generations. We're still kind of grabbing on to that differences thing. And leaders are not doing everything they can do. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts. One thing is, you know, you mentioned about how, you know, they're good at this thing, right, in the technical aspect of it. But mm-hmm. those leaders that you were talking about, they're typically the ones, they typically came from that technical standpoint, that background, right? And mm-hmm. and I venture to say that most people who become people leaders, people managers, are not really trained. That's not their think, right? So they need to receive more assistance in that. Companies are failing their leaders by just hanging them out. They take them from this technical individual contributor role and just place them and plop them and say, hey, now we expect you to take care of all these people in a different way. And it's a completely different skill set, right? But they have to learn on the fly. That's a tough thing to do, right? That is a very tough thing to do because the only thing they have to filter that role through is their experiences. Mm-hmm. I would do it this way. So it's hard for them to take that step back and delegate and just leave people alone and let them run with that autonomy I mentioned before, because they're like, oh, this person is performing it their way and it's not the way I would do it. So it's wrong, right? So what we need to do is allow, like, really get that leader some excellent training and support so they don't feel like they, you know, they feel like they can ask those questions. They feel like they have maybe a mentor that they can ask questions about how to be an effective leader, the right courses, a coach, right? Instead of just leaving them to figure it out on their own, because that is a very, very important position, especially those middle managers, right? Mm-hmm. Those middle managers really get no love, right? So because they're in between both and they're really that glue between the leadership, the top brass, and the people who are doing the work, or the grunts, as we call them in the military, right? So we really have to start focusing in on them. And then from that diversity standpoint, a lot of us, you know, it's human nature to gravitate towards like people, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to really challenge our thinking, right? Go talk to the person who seems like they have a completely different background, whatever that is, right, than you. Right. Go learn something from them and about them. And that's what is so tough for a lot of folks. And that's why we stay in these little siloed bubbles. Right. And that's why we typically hire people who look like us or who golf at the same country club or went to the same school. Right. Because it's familiarity. That does not mean that they're the right person, but it's familiar. Right. So we have to challenge our thinking, right? You mentioned AI earlier on that you wanted to talk about that. There are some software now that a few organizations are working on leveraging AI to kind of remove some of those hiring biases and recognition biases that take place within organizations. So they'll look at like projects that were worked on, right? Look at the statistics of that project. What has this person done versus this person? We may have been looking at John because we know him. We see his face every day. We think he's doing an amazing thing when in all actuality, he's been in that same place for 5 years just talking to people and he never gets his work done. Whereas this quiet, introverted person has been crushing it. We never seen them in our lives because they don't come out of their office or they never say anything in a meeting, but they're the ones that's actually driving John's work, right? So we have to look at things like that to help augment our decision-making so we can ensure that we're doing those inclusive cultural exercises, right? Before we go ahead and make that game-changing decision.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting as AI is, in relative terms, I would say it's exploding in terms of its impacts. And so I look at that and I say now, so we had EQ, rather, we had IQ, intelligence, we had that. Although it's been studied since the 1930s, we got this thing called emotional intelligence or EQ. And now we got this other thing going on called AI. And how does AI play with EQ and IQ? And what you've just described is it can have a very beneficial impact on gaining understanding about patterns of behavior and tendencies and those kinds of things. Very, very valuable. What it won't do ever, in my view, it will never replace emotional intelligence.
Right.
It will never replace the abilities of a human being to have feelings. You know, it's never going to go there. But it can potentially affect how people view the combination of their basic capabilities and their ability to build relationships. It can have a detrimental effect on that if we let it. It's not a big concern per se, but it could be. Because again, I happened to watch a movie I flew back from Madrid this week. I was over there for a vacation. And I watched it on Netflix. It was starring Jennifer Lopez. It was about a human being that was dealing with artificial intelligence, individuals that were programmed with artificial intelligence, and how she had to come to trust this huge robot that was programmed to act and think and behave like a human being, but they couldn't really pull it off. And I don't think they'll ever be able to pull it off. It's been on my mind, so I don't know why I'm talking to you about this, but I am.
Because of the emotional, I think that the thing that got you there was the human component, the human element of being human, right? The emotions. And like you said, AI can't do that. That's not what it's for, nor should we try to make it that, right? And that's where, you know, again, a lot of organizations are messing up, right? You got people replacing whole call centers, right, with these chatbots and you know, AI-driven phone calls and all this other stuff. But they can't pick up on the little minutia that makes us human,
right?
Voice changes, right? Inflections. Are we sitting up or down, right? Are we happy? Are we smiling while we're speaking? You know, all these different things, the language, the nuances to language, right? Slang. It's too much, right? It's too much. And to be able to try to program that, it's not going to be successful. There have been organizations that have cut their people and then had to rehire, right? Because the chat robot answered just completely wrong. We've seen, you know, Microsoft, this is public knowledge, right? They had an issue with their chatbot before where it was giving like hateful speech, hateful rhetoric. And they're like, what the heck is this thing saying on the tweets, right? So those are things that just happen. Like, do not try to replace a human with that, right? Use it for augmenting the intelligence to help make them faster and better at their job. But to replace a human, most stuff, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, technical things, yes. Cool. If we need a robot at a packing station, you know, it can go ahead and pull and do all these other things. Like, we see that every day. But anything with human interaction being necessitated, human connection, human emotion being necessitated for that role, just don't do it.
See, that's why I asked you, because I knew you'd have something to say about that.
Well, my background is tech, so you know I've been watching it.
Yeah. Our time is up.
Ah, you know, come on.
Javon, this was a fast and full of interesting stuff kind of conversation, at least from my standpoint. I really enjoyed what you had to say. I'm sure the energy that you comes through the screen in this format is part of your charm, the spell you cast on your clients to be able to help them with their organizations and help them achieve great results. I appreciate your time to be here today on the Soft to Steel podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Dennis. Yes, this was a fascinating conversation. And thank you for all the thought-provoking questions and just allowing me to share your platform with you today.
Okay, my friend. Have a good weekend.
You do the same.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft to Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.